Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Attention, collectors of vinyl, have you ever gone into a record store and felt overwhelmed by all the unfamiliar options? Are you frustrated by the constantly increasing prices of classic rock staples? Do you avoid streaming music or long for the days when music was recommended to you by a friend instead of an algorithm? If the answer to any of these questions is yes, then check out I'd Buy That for a Dollar, a podcast about inexpensive, common, and underappreciated records that are waiting to be rediscovered. Each week, hosts Sean, Jeremy, and Peter discuss an album and the artist's history. Previous episodes include selections by The Isley Brothers, The Carpenters, The Doobie Brothers, and Donna Summer, among others. Become a bargain bin pro and impress all your friends with cool music trivia. Listen to I'd Buy That for a Dollar wherever you get your podcasts.
Creative Control with Vish Khanna.
First of all, I am still riding high. I was just in Ottawa over the weekend and I saw Wu-Tang Clan for the first time ever. One of my favorite things ever. And Paul McCartney, one of my favorite guys ever. The Beatles, a hip-hop, and an actual Beatle all in the same day. I can't get over it. I gotta get over it because I gotta tell you about this week's show, which is also exciting. Maybe not as exciting as Wu-Tang Clan and Paul McCartney in the same day, but still. This week, an extensive interview with Sloan's Jay Ferguson and Chris Murphy and photographer Catherine Stockhausen about their new photo book, Murder Records 7-inch Singles 1993 to 1998, which includes a 28-song download and an oral history of every single that Murder released up to 1998. So, people like Eric's Trip, Hardship Post, Stinkin' Rich, a.k.a. Buck 65, The Superfriends, Local Rabbits, Thrush Hermit, Jail, Zampano, The Inbreds, The Certain Someones, and Sloan, all documented here. Catherine, Jay, Chris, our pal Colin Medley, and myself, we all met at Jay's house in Toronto the other day to talk about the past, present, and future of Murder Records. Also, some exclusive Sloan news for you on this episode. Listen, just listen to it. It's an insightful conversation about a really important part of Canadian music history and one of my favorite bands ever, Wu-Tang Clan and Paul McCartney. No, Sloan. Sloan is who I'm talking about there. Hey, this week's episode is brought to you by Pizza Trocadero. For my money, the best pizza you can eat in Guelph, Ontario. A proud, independent family business run by a punk rocker, Trocadero only uses a rich array of fresh ingredients cut by hand and homemade dough made daily, all baked to perfection inside of a stone oven. It's gourmet panzerotti, calzones, wings, salads, garlic bread, breadsticks, and oh man, the pizza. Personally, I like the gourmet domateo with goat cheese, artichoke, roasted red pepper, mushrooms. I sub out the turkey breast for eggplant, but that's just me. Wash the whole thing down with a brio? Man, I am getting hungry just talking about this. Call Pizza Trocadero at 519-829-2444. Visit them at 7 Municipal Street in Guelph and online at trocaderoguelph.ca. TrocaderoGuelph.ca. That's Pizza Trocadero, a place of the good trade. So, Jay, this is a nice house. Is this your house? Like, do you own the house or do you rent the house?
This is rented for one night only tonight.
Really?
I want to make it look like I live somewhere.
It looks very
lived. I live in a box under the bridge.
What can you tell us about this place? Is it? Is there a good story behind it?
No.
Nothing?
Just, well, I don't know. I bought it a few years ago. It's 100 years old. It used to be like some worker's cottage. And it was renovated. They took all the wood out of the walls, and then they made a ceiling out of it. And I think people find that a little bit, makes it like a cabin, a downtown cabin.
Yeah, it does have a kind of a cabin-esque feel. How long have you been here? A year?
5 years.
Five years. Yeah. I misheard you. That's pretty nice. You know, you guys moved from Halifax to Toronto. How many years ago now?
I think I moved here in the late 90s, like 1997 or so, basically. And then Chris sort of followed not long after.
And what prompted that? Why come to Toronto? You guys were sort of, you know, I have to say, and I'll be saying lots of different things throughout our conversation because that's how a conversation works, but I actually learned about the city of Halifax because of your label, Murder Records. Is that kind of strange?
Maybe. We were a major tourist attraction, so it does sort of make sense. I think, I don't know, I think it's probably the same as, I feel like I have talked to people, even like my neighbor Jeff, he was a big REM fan growing up, and I think he actually made pilgrimages down to Athens, Georgia, you know, so I think when something, if you're a music fan and something comes from a small area, I think it was exciting for us to even to go to Seattle for the first time.
Uh-huh.
A little bit, I would say it was. I mean, based on just sort of what had happened there in the music scene and the explosion in the late 80s, and I think a lot of small towns benefit from or garner attention based on bands that come from there if you're a music fan,
yeah.
Would you say?
Yeah, and I think that Halifax, I think one of the things that we thought was fun, even though we knew at the time that it was more hype than reality, was that we got to be sometimes mentioned in the same breath as these other towns, like where regionalism had been the real thing, you know, in the 80s and 90s, whether it's Athens or Seattle, Chapel Hill, D.C., the Maritimes or Halifax or whatever. It sounds almost like a joke to compare them, but like I'm sure that, or Montreal later, for example. But everything I've ever read about any of those scenes is that anybody who's sort of experiencing it firsthand thinks it's a joke. But you know, there was something happening and kind of fun and magical about Halifax at the time. I mean, it's goofy, but you know, it didn't make no one made any money really, but you know, there was a lot of attention and I don't know, it was exciting for a while. I remember thinking that we should go. So someone in Nova Scotia Tourism should be like giving us a few bucks.
I'm serious.
Maybe we're giving Joel Plaskett some few bucks.
I understand that Joel does pretty well there. Well, I feel Nova Scotia.
I think they do love him. Like I think the last East Coast Music Awards he won 6 times or something, and I think by the time he's up there for the 3rd time, he's already a little bit beat red, embarrassed or something.
I think so too. But like he really. Like someone put a tin whistle in his hand one time or in his mouth, and I think he did a whole record of that, didn't he? On that 3 record, isn't that a bunch of like tin whistle and stuff? Yeah, he sort of like drank the poison, if you ask me.
Yeah, the 3rd record or whatever, yeah, is pretty much all. There is actually tin whistle on that.
But his dad was big into like he.
Is Gaelic for 3.
3 machine, David Bowie. But Plaskett, I always joke. Yeah, Plaskett's holding the fort. He's really like, and made a real industry for himself. And he's done better than like of all of us, everybody who's like in this, from the sort of from our Murder Records pedigree. He's kind of done the best. Like, he's got a real industry going on, and he stayed in Halifax. When we first started, being from Halifax was a big part of our story, and in a way, moving here kind of ruined what was kind of the major part of our story. Even though it wasn't, we would have wished that it were more about the music. But you know, us coming from Halifax and not having to move to the big city was so much a big part of our story.
You mean it ruined the kind of underdog aspect of the story?
A little bit, and the sort of from elsewhere kind of thing. It's like, you know, if we showed up in Toronto, I'd be like, hey, there they are. But now if you see me at Metro, I'm like, oh, geez, there he is again.
But what exactly, I don't know if you answered this, what exactly prompted the move then? I mean, was Halifax
mostly girls, like we're dating people who wanted to either move to a place where you could get a job, or we had already dated everyone in Halifax, and so it's a small town. It's like, well, I've dated everybody. Well, I guess I got to move.
Andrew Scott was the first person to live here.
Andrew was up here since '93, and again, his girlfriend, who's his wife now, he made the right decision in that, you know, he followed the person up that he spent his life with. But if you read the Twice Removed book that came with our reissue of Twice Removed, I get into just how I couldn't believe that he was moving. I was like, what do you mean you're moving? Like, this is the opportunity of a lifetime and you're blowing it.
Why was it the opportunity of a lifetime?
Because how many people were getting record deals to American companies from Halifax? Oh, geez. Look
no.
who's at the door.
Oh,
look
God.
Who decided to show up.
Oh, I think Catherine might be here. Let's find out. Never know with Jay's place. It could be anybody. Did you order some food or something, Jay?
What's that?
Oh, no, look, it's Catherine.
Sorry.
Hey, Catherine, how are you?
Hey, Catherine.
Nice to see you.
Come
you
on
should
in.
Sit where Colin's sitting. And
yeah, beat it, Colin.
Get out of here, Colin. Colin Medley is also here.
Catherine, we're not very far into this. We're just sort of like doing a sort of like a quick intro.
I actually don't even have the machine on. It's just, we're just warming up.
You're kidding.
Up. No, it's on. It's fine.
I'm just joking.
So what happened?
Do you want water or juice? I'm like, water would be great.
So Jace is going over to get
rehearsal dinner.
A wedding rehearsal dinner. Who's getting married, Catherine? Briefly.
Rob Gordon and Sarah Millman.
Oh, right. Interesting.
Drummer Rob Gordon?
Mm-hmm, yes.
Of Pony DeLook fame?
Yes, I have and maybe still playing a band with Rob.
Pony DeLook, that's right. Another Murder Records alum.
Murder Records recording artist Rob Gordon, though he wasn't on that album.
Nice. So how did it go? How was the wedding rehearsal?
We didn't start rehearsing till exactly 9 o'clock.
Wow.
And I left.
Who chose Thursday for a day? Was that you?
Who does a wedding rehearsal at Thursday at 9 o'clock? That's weird.
I know.
Who has a wedding rehearsal the day that they chose to do the interview?
Well, the invitation to the wedding rehearsal was said 6 to 9.
Right.
What's your history here? You two have known each other, I can tell, a long time.
Catherine and I met at NASCAD, at Nova Scotia College of Art and Design. And she would have been 18?
18, yep.
And I would have been 22?
Old.
21. I was 21 or something like that. And I seemed older at the time. I'm still older, but not much anymore. But we met then. And then, so we were, I don't know if we were really hanging out too much then, but.
I remember our first music conversation while we were like painting color wheels with gouache.
Yes.
Or something.
And you talk about hardcore?
Dag Nasty.
Yeah, so Catherine was and still is really cute. And she was into like hardcore, like DC hardcore and like this kind of stuff, and had a radio show on CKDU
yeah.
that played hardcore.
Yeah.
So she was like pretty up my alley. Too young for me, I thought, at the time. The joke is I'm now, you know, dating her daughter. But so we hung around, and so we knew each other at least peripherally starting then. So that's 1990 or 91.
90.
And then the other thing that was going on was it when we were recording Twice Removed?
Mm-hmm.
Catherine was going to art school in Boston, and I felt some kind of like, we're both from a small town, and we're both trying to see the world or something like that. And I thought it was kind of cute. So, and then she came to visit New York and took a bunch of pictures that ended up being used in the Twice Removed book.
Yeah.
The Twice Removed record. And the iconic photos. Although she didn't take the cover photo.
No.
But
why didn't you take the cover photo? The most iconic photo of them all.
Because we were on Geffen and we had to spend a bunch of money on stupid people. That would have been preferable to me, but it was whatever. There's too much money flying around.
Did you go to art school for photography?
She's,
you can't nod.
She's
can't,
nodding.
It's not called a Nodcast. It's a podcast, which still doesn't work. Anyway.
Nodcast. That would be a hit. I'm starting one.
Happens all the time. You'd be surprised.
Wouldn't be a hit.
Yes, I went to art school for photography, yes.
And so when they asked you to do this, this was in your wheel. I don't know why. I got the impression this was something that you just sort of fell into doing, like documenting the scene, I mean.
No,
Had you been taking photos of bands before that?
Yeah. I mean, the thing is at NASCAD, in foundation photography, you had to weekly shoot and develop 4 rolls of film. That was just to keep you shooting. So you kind of just had to have your camera with you all the time. And what I did at night was go see bands. So it just made sense to photograph the bands. And that's how it started.
Do you remember the first sort of murder-related band you may have documented? Like the first time you were like, huh, something's going on here.
I know that there are photos, at least a few photos, of Sloan playing at Café Olé in 93, which is Twice Removed.
Yeah, I shot one Sloan show, an all-ages show at Café Olé.
Yeah, so there are some photos I know from that. And she was also hanging out with other like local bands that we weren't putting out, like Purple Groove Monsters and whoever, you know, doing their tape cover. Like she was doing all these tape cover, like the Essen record and the... It was all written in... Killjoys. Oh, no, it was Purple Groove Monster. It was just like PGM or something.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, it was terrible. Terrible stuff. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, and I photographed the cover of the No Class cassette.
Right, because there are a couple record labels happening out there. There was Murder Records, No Records.
Which was a cassette-only label.
Yeah. Cinnamon Toast Records. And to further complicate things... Cinnamon Toast was run by a bunch of people, including Colin McKenzie, who was our kind of right-hand man at Murder Records, which drove me nuts that he was doing both. But whatever, the town was small. I guess there are only so many people to do things.
You don't like double agents of any kind. Like, you were mad at Andrew for being leaving town.
I want, can we get a group of people together who will work on something and do it properly?
And just focus on it. You're probably, that's not an unreasonable desire, I would say.
The only person I've ever found who will do that is Jay.
Jay,
my life partner.
Jay, you've never had a side...
I left Catherine for Jay.
Have you ever had like a side project? Have you had any like a distracting side project at any point in your time since you've started Sloan?
No. I guess Chris and I did like a CBC Radio 3 show for a year together.
But that was still, you were with him.
Yeah. I think he got it and he said, Jay, will you come do it? Or something like that.
Here's a thing that I thought was interesting. In setting up this meeting, we were trying to establish where we were going to go. And Chris chimes in, oh, we'll just go to Jay's house. And I'm like, all right. I remember writing the email. I'm like, we'll see what Jay has to say. Catherine, in your experience, is this the nature of these guys' dynamic? Does Chris just tell Jay what to do and then we all do it?
Well, we can't go to Chris's house because people are sleeping.
Right.
Chris won't go to my house because I have a cat, apparently.
Oh, right, it's not plural. There's one.
Are you anti-cat? Why are you anti-cat? Are you allergic or something?
I'm not interested in cats.
And he's allergic to
the idea of cats.
Cuteness.
Yeah. And no, I knew that Jay would rather us come here than him have to go somewhere. It's like, yeah, let's meet at St. Clair.
He's shaking his head at you right now. Also,
I'm just kidding. No, I know Jay's he's game. It's not like I'm like, I mean, Colin's here. I don't know him there very well. But it was all people that he knew. It wasn't like, hey, I'm having a bunch of people over to your house, Jay. And he'd be like, what are you talking about? And it's like,
I'm not trying to make
you know
a big
Vish,
deal.
You know Catherine. Yeah, it's like, he knows Colin too, as it turns out. anyway, I knew that Jay would be fine with it.
No, it's
And
fun.
I knew that if he was like, you know what, it's going to be a problem, he would just tell me. It wasn't one of those things like, oh my gosh, it's going to be a problem. How am I going to tell Chris?
Well, it's an interesting dynamic for me as well, because it basically, as I understand it, in terms of Sloan's sort of involvement running Murder Records, it's really Chris and Jay running Murder Records. That's the story we've always kind of heard.
Hey, you said that, Vish. We didn't say that.
Well, I have no disrespect.
Sorry, you and anybody else who knows anything about it.
No disrespect to Patrick, Andrew, or Gregory, or anybody.
Who?
You know, that guy, the other guy in Sloan. Do you know, isn't that his name? Greg? Gregory?
Yeah.
He's
of
also,
course. Yeah, of course, Greg. Well, no, Gregory came along. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure.
He's a
he came along a little bit later. And
he's a touring member of the band.
He is, and he's made some appearances on the last couple of records as well, helping out and things like that as well. But yeah, he wouldn't have involvement in Murder Records was primarily a 1990s thing for us. It sort of had a bit of a reboot, maybe. 3 or 4 years ago.
Right, you put out the Pony de Look record and Will Curry and the Country French.
That's right, yeah. And then it just sort of... Oh yeah, and that's another connection. Catherine played keyboards. One of three keyboards.
On Murder Records.
That's right. Yeah. That's why we had to restart it. It was basically so the cast could be on.
Nothing to do with knowing each other.
Right. Yeah. Because it is interesting that the singles collection is 1993 to 1998. Yet at the same time, at the Great Hall the other night, you were celebrating 21 years since the label, you know, came to be.
Well, but Murder Records has been. It still does sort of exist as an entity for Sloan. Like mm-hmm. it still says Murder Records on our albums, the Sloan album. So kind of in the 90s, it was definitely more about documenting Halifax and the Maritimes. And we'd branched out with a Zampano single and Local Rabbits records and stuff. But
Hardship Post, I guess.
Hardship Post, yeah, Newfoundland.
Technically, not the Maritimes. Yeah.
That's right. So, good. Yeah, hey.
It's true. I've been to St. John's a few times. They get really annoyed.
Except from Newfoundland.
Murder Records... I always compared it to Anthem Records, the Rush label. I don't know if you're familiar. Uh-huh. It just Anthem essentially just means that Rush pays for their records and does what they want. And though they did put out a bunch of records, I think they put out Max Webster and maybe like Chalk Circle or something like some like not maybe not them, but just like some like Queen Street bands from the 90s or something. And probably a bunch of terrible stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, but Murder Records is similar in that it. If anybody knows what it is, it's essentially a community service project.
Yeah.
Like for putting out our friends' bands. And it also is synonymous for me anyway with basically the fact that we are in charge of our own... I have tried to be in charge of our own destiny or whatever it's like.
You've been an employee, I suppose, or something. I don't know. You've signed with other labels before. You've worked with a few different labels over the years.
Yeah, that's right.
And what was that experience like? I mean, I guess I know the answer to this because I know the history of the band, but was there ever a great experience working with someone else instead of doing things yourself as you have been with Murder?
Why don't you answer that yourself? Just do it. Do it as me.
Well, is it out of just...
Catherine, you answer it.
There must have been something nice about being on...
Everybody. Part of our lore was that Geffen tried to tell us what to do, and we said, no way, man. It's like everyone we met at Geffen was awesome.
Yeah.
Everyone was cool. Everyone was a person doing their job. And so what if Hole... Guess what? Hole was more of a priority than Sloan. No kidding. Like, what are you going to do?
Sure.
Like... Someone going to go to the wall for us and quit or something? Or like punch Courtney?
Shouldn't even joke about that. She'll figure something out and know that you said that. And
Courtney's fine. I met Courtney one time. Let's talk about that.
You met Courtney Love?
Sure.
Didn't she say you were cute?
Maybe.
On the radio?
Oh, maybe.
That's the way you tell it.
I don't remember lately. She did talk about us on the radio one time. We had a friendship with Jackie Ferry, who was Frances Bean's nanny. And Jackie Ferry ended up being the tour manager for the Lemonheads when we went on tour with the Lemonheads in 93. And so we got to know her. So we had a tenuous, like, Courtney connection. She was, like, close with Courtney. And when we were in England one time, I remember going to Courtney's hotel room one time. She's, like, sitting in bed.
Sorry, were you on your own, or was everybody?
No, I was with Jackie. Like,
oh, I see.
Like, I don't know what we were doing there. Anyway, she's obviously larger than life kind of character.
Yeah,
especially at the time, it was just like, wow. I guess I'm. It was like visiting the Queen or something.
Did I tell you I met her this year?
Courtney?
Yeah.
Oh, what's she saying? Does she still
hi,
think I'm cute?
I'm Courtney. She held out her hand.
We have a Valley Girl, Courtney Love. I didn't realize that.
She looked really good.
Yeah.
Well, she's had some work done, I'm pretty sure. She doesn't...
She didn't even look work gross. Like, she kind of just looked kind of healthy and normal.
What was the context of you meeting Courtney Love?
Well, she was with Paul Haggis.
I don't know who that is.
He's a director. He called out Scientology for being a sham. He left Scientology. He made that movie Crash. He's done a lot of different things.
Scientology is a sham?
I don't think we have time for this on this particular episode, but yeah. No, oh my. Drops the mic.
We're done. Interview's over.
No, I was at a hotel in New York with my employer, George, who knows Paul Haggis. We ran into them in the lobby. Paul's like, oh, do you know Courtney? And then she's and she stood up. I only saw the back of a head. I was like, it cannot be. And then she turned up, stood up and turned around and said, hi, I'm Courtney.
Wow, that's pretty amazing.
Did Courtney Love just play in this town?
Coming soon.
Oh. Really? Oh.
Colin says coming soon. You would know that. You work at a record store. You sell tickets to things, right? So Hole's coming? Is that what? Just Courtney Love. Oh, okay. Are you going to go to that show?
No. Is it a concert or is she speaking?
Do you have Hole tickets? And also, do you have any fishnets?
That's you.
There's people prank calling.
Chris has been calling.
So you start shooting Sloan. You got a hardcore background. You like hardcore music. When you start shooting them for school, mm-hmm. when do you develop an affinity for the actual music? Because it must be hard to be objective because you've known the people
well,
in the band.
You had known, to be fair, you knew this hardcore stuff that you were into was like prior to that even.
Yeah, I was shooting bands before Sloan formed. You were in Blackpool when I first met you.
You have any pictures of that?
You want to get into it?
No. Is there a story?
You know the story.
I can't remember. Does it make me look bad?
No, it's nothing to do with you.
Okay, go ahead.
My first album cover.
There's no one who understands what's going on.
Oh, that's right. Oh, sorry. There's a Blackpool was a band. I did some time in Blackpool, but it seemed like everybody did a bit of time in that band. Matt Murphy was in that band. Dave Marsh was in the band.
Yeah.
Tim Brennan, Tracy Stevens. Oh, but you got a cover, your first album cover.
It was my first album cover. I photographed a sign for an old Halifax bar, the Seahorse. Well, it's still there, but.
Oh, you didn't get credit.
And in the liner notes, it said cover photo courtesy of the Seahorse Tavern.
Ooh, that's a burn. Oh, man.
Well burned. That was a sad little teenager.
Well, what I really realized is that photographers are really psycho about credit. I mean.
And spelling.
Right. Well, you're Catherine Stockhausen, so good luck.
There's actually what do you say in the opening essay here about different...
Different ways my name could be spelled. Yeah.
Yeah, that's got to be tough. Stockhausen. I wouldn't know what that's like being named Vish Khanna.
I can imagine. the most common was Stockhauser, which to me just sounds really ugly.
Yeah, that's no good.
Stockhauser.
Kind of makes it seem like you...
Catherine Stockhauser.
Can you say Catherine Stockhauser in the Courtney Love voice?
Hi, I'm Catherine Stockhauser.
Good setup, Vish, and well played, Catherine.
So you're shooting, because, your photos are, for people like me and Colin, who's significantly younger than me, you're an iconic
person.
No. I was going to say that your photos are iconic, and as I'm flipping through this book, and I don't know how to convey, look at the local rabbits there. Look how young those guys are.
Can I just interject and say, some of the photos that we used are kind of forced upon Catherine. They weren't her first choice of photo. We wanted photos that I especially had to do specifically with artwork associated with the singles.
And the era.
And as close, and photos as close to the era as the singles.
Oh, I see.
We could get. Catherine, so, for instance, there are pictures of from the Edgefest single that aren't even really that great. Like there's a picture of Rich Terfry in there and... It's just kind of a crappy picture, but we, but I know
he just, he put that on Vine. He went through a treasure chest of all his stuff and this Africa thing was on, I'll show you guys after, but it's on his Vine. He just, it's kind of cool. Anyway, sorry.
The
You'll show
particular
us Africa?
Photo that
That's good.
Bothers me a little bit is the local rabbits one when it's just the three of them. That one.
What's wrong with it, Catherine?
This is for Murder Record 7-inch 013 for those following along at home.
You mean put on your snowsuit, you're going to hell?
I didn't want to say the name of it. I went by catalog number, but yeah. Yeah.
Are you allowed to say hell on the show?
Yeah, you can say whatever you want.
Are you allowed to say snowsuit?
Can't actually say local. I'm going to have to edit that out. Yeah, no, it. What's wrong with this photograph?
Well, I would never take a photo like that now. It's like three guys standing in front of a wall with like front lighting with a flash. Yeah, he's nodding. Photographer in the room's nodding.
Coco knows. Coco, what do you make of this photo?
It's a photo that I would probably take. But no, I just mean that in the way that I'm still kind of learning the ins and outs of photography.
You're actually a little starstruck being in the same room as Catherine Stockhausen, right? That's fair to say.
I don't get starstruck, but I don't get starstruck.
I'm trying to make it as awkward as possible.
I don't get starstruck.
I don't think there's anything wrong with this picture. I think it communicates that they're just like young, goofy kids. And it's nice. I mean, whatever. Yeah, they look about as cool as you could get them at that point. They're so wild and rambunctious.
They would. What's your answer?
I probably would have taken this photo a year ago and thought that I would, you know, this is going to turn out great, and then got it developed and then realized it's not that great.
Yeah. I think it oh my God. You know,
no,
you're
I'm
embarrassing.
Agreeing. I'm agreeing.
You went
with
from
you.
Starstruck to offensive in like a split second. Yeah.
I agree with you completely, though.
I think there's a chair over here, Colin.
This was when I took photos, there was never any styling, let alone makeup. And, you know.
Well, Pete Elkus always wears makeup. That should be said.
But like, he's wearing a huge
Lopey
sweater.
But I almost like that. Like that's one of the things I like about the
okay,
photo.
Okay, so you and I were talking about this at the Great Hall. I went up to him and showed him the photo. He's like, oh, I love that sweater. Where's that sweater? He wants to find that sweater. You know, I think it looks like a band whose B-side song would be called Play With Your Poodle. Don't you think? That's the B-side of this particular single, and it looks like that's
the sweater was made from a poodle.
That's a double A-side.
What I was trying to say earlier is that there's a few photographers that I can think of that do this. Glenn Friedman, maybe, or Jim Cohen. There's certain people that I can kind of feel the love in the photographs. You know what I mean? I can feel the affinity for the people. There's this photo of everyone climbing up a rock or something like that. And I don't know where it is. It's at the beginning. It might not even be associated with a single. I think it's in the essay, right? In the opening essay. Anyway, there's just something about these photographs where I can kind of, do you know what I mean? Does that resonate with you that I can kind of feel your emotion here?
Less than these guys being bands and me photographing them as bands. We were just all a gang and we hung out and I just always had a camera with me. Like that was just like, we all went on a road trip and I had my camera and we just started taking photos for fun.
Is it hard to, I feel like most of the only studio shots are really Sloan making Twice Removed, right? Like actually being in a studio when a band's working?
Well, this era from this book, I don't think I was really doing much studio stuff yet. Though I should have been, actually.
There are photos. I meant to bring my computer, Vish, because I was going to show you that I kind of...
I thought we were going to play video games, but yeah.
No, because of the wonderful oral history that you did of the Super Friends Mock-Up Scale Down, I started making a booklet. I started using your text and then taking outtake photos of Catherine's to make a little booklet to go with it. And when we priced it out, we said, forget it. Although we may do a PDF or something that would come with it. But I was just going to say, with that, there are shots of the Super Friends recording that record and cool photos that Catherine took.
Oh, did you mean recording studio or photo studio?
Oh, no, I strictly meant recording studios because...
Oh, I misunderstood.
Sorry, so do you want to change your answer? As far as I know, like the Sloan shoot is at...
Well, for instance, I don't know if you can picture the artwork in Mock-Up Scale Down.
Oh, that's right. There's actually
Shot of them recording in that little room. But again, it's not a studio per se. It was just in the basement of a house.
I just wonder, from your perspective, is it weird to be within a band's working space and actually documenting them?
Weird? I don't really... Walking into a recording studio as a band's working is never a good vibe.
No, that's exactly what I mean.
It's true. It's
and like
true.
The Twice Removed, the Twice Removed sessions are kind of notoriously, legendarily, they were stressful. There was tension, right?
Yeah, for sure. But it was, I don't know how to describe it. The other thing for Catherine taking the pictures is she's really in my camp. You know,
I don't think that was the case so much that first
Not
time.
So much the at first, but I feel like you're definitely a friend of mine. And so
I like Jay. I think I knew Jay almost maybe before you because you used to call in.
What?
Used to call the radio show.
And I call Ginger to your radio show?
Yeah, and the funding drive.
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Would I have had the radio show at the same time as yours?
Yeah.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
I think you might what you have been slot? In Kearney Lake Road still.
What's that?
I started the radio show in 80, no, 90. Were you still in Kearney Lake Road?
Yeah, Kearney Lake Road would have ended.
87 to 90, March 90.
That was the band that, for the listeners, the band that Chris and I had from right. 87 to 1990.
So I used to play that band, so right, maybe okay. That was why you what gave
format,
us money.
What format did you play of ours?
Cart.
Oh, yeah, the radio carts.
College radio joke. Cart.
Yeah, that's pretty good. No, I just wonder because it's, you know, sometimes it can be weird being in a band space.
Can I just say that Kearney Lake Road, just sidebar, number 4 on the CKDU chart in 1990. And...
Did that feel like the big time?
Yes. Felt like it was like Pixies, REM, Sloan, you know, Everything But the Girl or whatever.
No, that's one of the things that I learned. I don't know how much you guys know about me and my relationship with this community of people, this label. But I mean, it came, I discovered it at a very formative time for me. And I really learned a lot about community. And I'm curious if you can each maybe talk about where that connection or desire for community, like where was that instilled in you? That's a very heavy question, I know, for such an informal conversation. But it's something that continues to resonate. Even this artifact is a labor of love that, you know, you did to commemorate your time together. But it's a remarkable thing.
I just want to say, I agree. Again, this was all community service project. But when I look at it and when it's all together, I get choked up, basically. I'm like, we were all kids. And, you know, for generations before us, it was, you know, people did their military service. And those are the people that they think about, you know, when they get older. Like, the guys I was in the Army with, or like, these are the guys I was in the Army with. And we all shared this thing that we all did as young people, mostly guys. Like, very few women, actually, Catherine was very involved. So it'd be like Julie Dwaron, the
jail.
Girls, the women, but the girls at the time in jail. Jennifer was my high school prom date. And
they in turn were kind of, you know, novice musicians. They were inspired by watching you.
For sure. Yeah, yeah. They were. Well, I remember I was at a Jellyfish, just a quick sidebar, I was at a Jellyfish Babies gig with Jennifer Pierce in 1985 or something. And she was like, he's just moving the same shape of his hand up and down the guitar. I said, yeah. And she's like, I could do that.
It's true.
Yeah. But anyway, so I'm, Jay and I each have, you know, Discord would be my model, and perhaps, you know, REM or like the Athens thing would be one of Jay's models, or, you know, I think as a community run thing,
yeah.
You know, as an example, what would be another example for you?
I don't know. Yeah, that's a good example, I would say.
Yeah.
Well, we were pretty...
I feel like in all those examples, it's documenting something. It's like, hey, we're actually doing something important. And beyond the fact that we like it, we're documenting our friends. And that's, I mean, the examples you cite, I see people doing that all the time. And you kind of wonder what motivates it on some level. Like, because you guys... You took a curatorial role here in doing this.
Yep.
And no one, you probably did it, I assume, because no one else was doing it.
But Jay and Catherine and I, what you're describing, more than, you know, any people in my life, like these two people,
like we've been, yeah, just sort of documenting the whole thing like for so long. And you might not like, Catherine might not like, or someone, a photographer, Colin or whomever. I don't mean, I'm trying to bring, give me five. I'm trying to bring you, I don't mean to make fun. But just, you might look at a picture and go, eh, could have been better, or like flash. But how cool is it that it exists? Yeah. Like, those pictures are there, and like they might not have existed. And I don't know. I think there's.
Should we talk about how much fun we had at my house going through my binders?
Yeah, like Catherine had me over to her house to start this process, and she has. I mean, I know perhaps this is obvious, or maybe not obvious to everyone, is that this is all film, and so she's got a giant. Binders full of women, binders full of negatives and contact sheets, and P.S. they're never in the same binder, so it's just a mess.
Sorry, I like a good topical Mitt Romney reference, by the way. Nothing, it's just amazing.
And nothing, people know that reference for years.
I'm trying to think of a better, a good pun for that, but binders.
I was so distracted by that I heard, I misheard, I heard it. I was
you mean
like,
just how, you mean how that was like a specific era, like I shouldn't have mentioned that?
No, it's great. It's
just where's the beef on the radio?
Well, Hip Club Groove, who are not mentioned in this book, one of my favorite rhymes of theirs is, you're going to get your ass caned like that kid in Singapore. So specific. Like, it was so like.
I remember that.
It was
I
in totally, the news for like a week.
I remember that kid. That's a good. That's a good reference.
Yes, about some girl yes,
Hip Club Groove are not in the book because they didn't have a 7-inch single.
Anybody who didn't have a 7-inch single is oddly missing from this 7-inch single.
Well, I just mean like, well, Al Tuck.
Tuck is sort of represented by One Day the Warner, really scrappy Super Friends version of that song.
On the way here, I downloaded the singles. It's a bit difficult on the website, but...
because it's not officially for sale yet.
On the way here, I was listening to the Stove Smother recording. It was so good, so fun.
This is another thing that I want to bring up, and I thank you for doing it. You guys were on the DGC Rarities Volume 1 collection, which probably was kind of a big deal, right? Like Sonic Youth was on it, Beck was on it, all these people
I
were on it.
I think a lot of people heard of us through that,
yes,
by the way.
Right.
And that was particularly atypical of our sound. But
it was
at
completely
the same time,
an anomaly, and you.
But at the same time, it was kind of cool and ahead of its time in a way.
Yeah, that's right. You kind of make a joke in the book about how you'd never heard of Beck at that point.
Yeah,
there's drum loops in it and stuff like that. But my point is, you submitted an Eric Strip cover, like that to me was like, I'm sold. These guys are. I love these guys. Like they have this opportunity. You know, a lot of bands would be like, oh, what are we gonna do? You know, we're on this compilation. We gotta give them our A material or whatever. And you guys were like, we love Eric's trip, I assume. I'm just, well, why'd you do that? Why would you do that in that circumstance? This is kind of quite a platform for Sloan. You hand in a cover of Eric's trip.
You might be making us look better than we are. It was probably like, what should we do? They need it tomorrow. We just did this Eric's trip cover. That's what they're getting.
Oh my God, my heart is broken
Sorry.
Right now.
Yeah, the truth is coming out.
It seemed,
also, it's fun to do stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like, we knew that we had... It sounds obnoxious, the ear of more people than maybe Eric Strip did in certain quarters, and to do something like that and maybe revert it back to others, you know, is a fun thing to do. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, for sure.
Sorry, and what's that?
We were also like a really big fish in the tiniest pond, and I think that I was conscious of trying to walk down the street and not feel like a giant jerk. It's like we're promoting the area. We are a community service project. We are we're going to put money and time and effort and energy back into the scene that we came from. And,
yep.
Because we had some money to do it. And anyway, I.
But it was also fun. Like, it wasn't completely just trying to help out. You know what I mean? Like the idea of. Well, the other side of it, the idea of putting out records is also kind of fun.
Well,
from my point of view,
sure.
As well, just from growing up and being into music or being into record labels that had an identity or something like that too, it was twofold. It was great to be able to help out bands that you either were friends with or that you really liked, because there was always a lot of great bands in Halifax. Like, even when Chris and I were in Criney Lake Road, or even before that, being jealous of the Jellyfish Babies, who put out their first album in...
The Jellyfish Babies?
The Jellyfish Babies.
Jellyfish Babies,
Jellyfish
sorry.
Babies, yeah.
Thank you. Chris liked that one.
They had a record out in grade 12, and I just remember being completely jealous.
Chris is doing some shenanigans. You know, the other thing that's...
I think they were in grade 11.
Okay.
And well, I was in grade 12, so I was furious.
You always want to be older than everybody else in the room. Why is that? Is that a thing with you? You just need to be the top dog?
No, but you know what? I don't know anyone older than me.
You don't know anyone older than you? That's telling.
Because
that is totally
I was
telling.
So into helping the younger kids, and so whatever.
Is it a hero thing? Do you want to be a hero? I have a kind of a slight...
Maybe.
I have a slight hero complex.
Maybe, but I remember feeling of some of the older bands, I'm like, throw me a bone. Help me out.
Yeah.
And I was just like, well, screw you guys. And whatever. And, you know, Jay, I appreciate you saying, Jay, that it was also fun, because maybe I leave that out. I'm saying it like we felt responsible for having to do it. Like, it was totally fun to
well,
do
everything.
Well, there is an ego side to it as well.
No,
a little bit.
No. There is, but actually
a
so...
vanity yeah. boutique.
But the one sort of thread I've noticed about this book and the songs that made it onto 7-inch is that so many of them seem to be fun ideas that kind of... Not disposable, not throwaways necessarily, but just like so many of the songs here seem like kind of experiments, anomalies in a band's catalog otherwise.
I kind of feel that with one of the first singles that came out, which was the Hardship Post single. It was like the first thing that they had put out after they had released like the Hack EP, which almost sounded a little bit like, you know, Canada's, like, it sounded a little more like Nirvana than anything that was coming out of Canada, even though I think our band had been, you know, hey, they're Canada's Nirvana, but
well, this
Hardship Post kind of sounded like Nirvana on the Hack EP, but when they came out with the Silver Suit single, they basically sounded more like Joe Jackson or New Wave or something like that.
Huh, I got a DC vibe. I got kind of like a early 90s, like, sorry, that's just me, kind of like
oh,
that
yeah, we'll fit.
Muted that's... guitar stuff going on that I kind of reminded me of, like, it didn't remind me of Fugazi or anybody particularly,
yeah.
But it, anyway, sorry, that's interesting.
So it's not, well, regardless, it's something different than what they had done before, and it's kind of neat that it would come out as a single, as sort of something new that they were doing, basically.
Why do you suppose this format, which, by the way, I mean, we haven't even gotten into this, vinyl is obviously, maybe it's passé already to talk about it, because vinyl's definitely had a resurgence. Singles, bands are putting out 7-inch singles again and devoting a lot of time to that sort of thing, but is there something about the format that kind of, do you think... inspires more fun, more experimentation?
Maybe you might be thinking, let's put this goofy thing on the single, because, you know, we probably, maybe, I don't know if, anyway, I was gonna say, like, our experiment, our stove smother thing was definitely different than our smeared record,
and that would probably never fit on a Sloan album, or it would seem strange if it was. It would stand out more on a Sloan album, but as a standalone thing, maybe it makes more sense.
Well, like the stood up same old flame thing could probably have made it onto an album.
Yeah but
stove
even
thing, maybe.
But even the stove smother thing, by the time we made Twice Removed, we probably would have put it on.
Yeah.
But it was definitely different than our first record, and it came out between the records, right? So it was a sort of step away from the sort of grungified.
Came out before Twice Removed?
I think so.
Stove
didn't
smother?
It?
Stove Smother would have come out before Twice Removed, yeah. Just before.
When we
it.
Say Stove Smother, by the way, folks, it's two songs.
That's right. That's right.
Stove and Smother. and it says in the book, but when we first did a hardcore version of an Eric Strip song called Smother, and Jay said, I'm not putting that out. And then and then he... So, but we did that. That was recorded at the same time we were doing all those Twice Removed demos. That was at Terry Pulliam's place at Sound Market Studio.
Yeah.
And then we did the, so that was recorded on that all that terrible gear. But then we did the
retroactive
Stove. Then Stove was done on 4-track, and that was done on, Jay was making tape loops, and he had to use a chopstick to keep it. And Andrew even called Jay the little chopstick for a while. Where's the chopstick?
For
Where's
a while,
the little
he
chopstick?
Said it at Great Hall the other night.
Exactly. Where's that little chopstick?
Oh man, I'm worried that you're going to be little chopstick to me forever now.
No,
that's an
no.
amazing nickname.
I shouldn't even say that. But anyway, and was it Can? I think it was Can.
I think it's a loop.
Yeah, it's by the band Can't. That's right. Right. Yeah.
Did I say, I think I cut it out, did I say in my notes that I became obsessed with Can when I was at a NASCAD party when I was wearing Gene Simmons makeup?
You've said that somewhere.
Okay.
I'd have to check to see. I mean, I've got the book right here.
I was at a NASCAD party and I was wearing a miniskirt.
I had become obsessed with since being turned on to them at a NASCAD party where I wore Gene Simmons makeup and a miniskirt.
Yeah. So
those were the days. You added that.
I did.
It was a little whiff of nostalgia there for that time in your life.
I was like, I can just, what a weird thing to do. I don't do that often. Anyway, that was at, you remember like Iris and Elmar?
Yeah.
And so I took his name, I think, for Elmar Dutchy Schwartz for like.
Right.
But they were Germans. And they were older. And they were like sculptors and they were totally weird. And anyway, so he told me, you know, I played, you know, Mother Sky single 100 times when I was high or whatever. You have to listen to the Can. And then it was the record that I got heavily into was Delay 1968, which is from before their first record. Do you know anything about that band?
I know a bit about Can. I still get regular dispatches from Damo Suzuki. I met him and introduced him at the Guelph Jazz Festival.
Right. I think I went to see Damo Suzuki at the House of Blues in Chicago. Well, anyway, the first record was with Malcolm Mooney. Do you know who
is? Yeah.
So anyway, I love that for that record. Anyway, but so what was my point?
I don't know. Talking about Can. Tape loops, having
just,
fun.
Just that I made the hardcore one, and then Jay kind of was championing this. You know, I think it was Jay's vision that we did this pre-Beck sounding thing.
Yeah, no, it's cool. I just wanted to ask you guys what actually inspired you to put this out. Now, I feel like there's been waves of nostalgia within Sloan's camp lately, and I'm just curious why. You've got the Twice Removed Deluxe Edition, which I'm referencing with a wave of my hand.
Gesture. It's over there.
And I bought that thing and it's great. And then you did at the Great Hall, you decided to play the Peppermint EP, the first Sloan release. So what's happening? Why are you looking back all of a sudden?
Well, on the one hand, we have a web store that we're trying to sell things through. So like we've been doing things like bootlegging ourselves and like putting out our own bootlegs.
Right.
And the Twice Removed reissue was an excuse to tour. It's like we don't have a record coming out this year. Let's generate something that we can tour on because, and also to show off the fact that we're the same four guys and that we sort of, you know, it was difficult to market us. I know that Geffen was resistant to having us all write. They were essentially pushing me and Patrick to be kind of the main singers.
Mm-hmm.
And we were like, no, we're all going to sing. And so that was kind of like a tough sell in a way, but now I just want to. I think that people who know us or follow us love the fact that we do that, or I don't know, love it, at least expect it.
They love it.
I think they love it too, or I want to think that they do, and that every, you know, I'd love to think that a quarter of our fans are Chris fans, and a quarter are Andrew fans, and a quarter are, I know it doesn't really probably break down like that, but you know, I like to show off the fact that we can do Twice Removed, and we're all still in the band, and we can all sing our songs.
I see.
And it's an excuse to tour in off years, and I'm thinking in a way that put out a new record next year, and then tour one quarter another the year after that, and then buy some time.
So all of this is stall tactics. That's basically what you've told us.
Well, I just mean, like, we don't sell that many records, so we can't put out a record and it's like, well, I guess we'll be promoting and selling this for the next 2.5 years. It's like, guess what? You know, 3 days have gone by. The record is dead. So, you know, you got to just put out small
things. Sure, no,
We have a web store. It's like, hey, let's just make 500 copies. Let's start a business model of, like, creating fun things that sell out right away. I don't know.
Yeah, and you're also reissuing Mock-Up Scale Down by the Super Friends, which I think is a very key release in the Murder Records catalog. And does that suggest that there's more of this stuff to come?
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, it's nice. They're expensive to do because we do limited runs only because you don't want to have tons of stuff lying around. Like the Super Friends thing coming out, that's just going to be 500 copies. But it's also fun just to do archival projects of things that we own. And we still have, you know, we still have the original masters of the Mock-Up Scale Down mixes. Let's let's make a record out of it, because I'm sure there's a lot of people who would maybe like to hear it or own it in that I guess, or something like that, you know. And also another thing, like, I feel like Chris and I have kind of been archiving our band. I'm a fan of bands and labels and things like that, as you would know, but I think Chris and I have been just saving just Sloan stuff over the years, whether it's
posters.
Photos, or, well, Catherine has all the photos and things like that, but also just archive material. And it's fun to make a box set, like the Twice Removed box set. And you would imagine, I think if I really liked a band, like, I would love to see something like that for a band that I really like. So it's made out of, you know, trying to care for, don't mean to sound cheesy, but like a care for your own legacy or something.
That,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So no, it's, and the Murder Records book is sort of part and parcel with that too.
You happy with this thing, Catherine?
Yeah, very happy. I'm honored.
We're very happy to have a continued relationship with Catherine and access to all of these photos. And she's not making any money off it either. We'll give her some money, but it doesn't reflect the work that it took to do all of the documenting. And hopefully she just remembers how much fun she had when she was young.
Are you taking photography?
At school?
I don't know.
When do you graduate?
Are you still taking photos professionally?
No, though I am photographing a wedding this weekend, which is terrifying.
When's the wedding? 6 to 9?
I'm photographing a friend's wedding. It's my gift to them. And the reason I was late was I was at the rehearsal and I was shooting that, and it was really fun. And I was like, I kind of miss taking pictures.
Is that the first time you've really taken on a big project like that in a while?
Oh yeah.
Why don't you do it more?
I don't know. I've got like a job and no one asks me.
Oh my goodness. Well, that seems like a crime, doesn't it?
Catherine, keep some time open in the next year. We're putting out a record next year.
All right.
How's your record doing, boys?
Good. We were at it today. Jay and I together, like a couple of dorks.
Just you two?
Yep.
And
just YouTube. I'm just sitting around watching YouTube while Chris put bass on my songs.
What's the progress report on this record?
Should we let the cat out of the bag?
Yeah.
This is great, an exclusive.
Well, maybe no already. Well, the idea, and hopefully it comes to fruition, is that we're making a double album. And so everybody, technically, if you have a double album, you have four sides. So there's four songwriters in our band.
This is good.
Everybody
math.
Gets thrown.
He's doing math for us.
Yeah, a little bit of math. A little bit of musical arithmetic. So instead of the way a normal Sloan record would work, where there'd be a Chris song, then an Andrew song, and a Jay song, and a Patrick song, we're going to group everybody's songs to an individual side. So it's almost like four little mini solo albums within one album. And we'll see how... Colin, do you approve? Or are you laughing like, they'll never do that?
It sounds like the Kiss solo album.
It's a little bit like that, yeah. I'm covering When You Wish Upon a Star on mine.
Thank you very much. Every time you mention it, you can't help but have someone say it's like the Kiss albums. And that's fine. It is like the Kiss albums. Except for they were successful right up until they did their solo albums.
So that doesn't...
We haven't been successful in a long time. Yeah, they tanked right after that. Like, they shipped... I like the story that they shipped a million of each record. They shipped a million of each. And they sold a total of 1 million. Or a total of 1.5 million. It returned double platinum. Or the ship platinum, return gold. Right,
yeah. I thought it was literally the other way around. Shipped gold, returned platinum.
What it's
people at home are manufacturing more to send more back.
What inspired this concept to do this?
I don't know if it sounds obnoxious, but I think if there's any band out there that could do something like that, maybe our band could, basically, because we have four songwriters, and maybe everybody could make their own album, potentially. Don't you think?
You wouldn't listen to the Lars Ulrich side of the Metallica double album?
No comment from Jay. Interesting.
I sort of don't even know who that is or who they are. I feel like our band has been around for a long time, and I mean, we could just keep making regular records, but sometimes it feels like you almost need a story with each record you put out
get
some attention a little bit. So I think that's sort of like an idea, like another idea that we've been thinking about for a few years, and now I think is the right time.
Cool.
To do it. And then maybe everybody will think, that was stupid, and then we'll come back with a regular record and be like, yay, it's great.
How far along are you?
Chris is the furthest along, I think, and then Andrew and I might be tied for second with a lot of music but no lyrics.
Patrick.
And Patrick.
Patrick.
Is, no, Patrick's gonna. He's got some chords. He's working on. No, I think he's got some ideas. He works more at home, and we'll be up at the studio.
Yeah, I've seen his work often on Twitter.
He has a whole other full time job writing. He's got a.
Oh, he's got the column, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, I've heard a bunch of his stuff. I know what's going on with him, and I know some songs that he wants me to play bass on. So, and I know how they go. But he's definitely, I know what he's doing the least, but that's par for the course.
Yeah. No, that's great. This is great. I'm happy you guys share this with.
But our last double record, he claims to have not known it was a double record till it was being mixed. That's his story.
Never hear the end of it?
Yeah.
Like, oh, he didn't know. Huh.
And he was like, what?
Why is he so perpetually out of the loop, this Patrick? I don't get it.
Because we write emails and he looks at it on his phone. And it's like, dear, I'd like to discuss the following things. And then he reads the first thing and he's like, ugh. And he doesn't read the rest.
Are you going to try? You should. I think you should. I don't know if he was serious, but I think you should shoot the photos for the next record, Catherine.
We talked about it once, but
I think it could work out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You heard it here.
Yep.
Another exclusive.
I would be down with that. I think that's a good idea.
Is this in Mojo?
Yeah.
Is this in Mojo magazine?
That's right. It's in Mojo. Chris J, thank you so much. Catherine, you too. Thank you so much for
Thank you, Vish, for taking this project seriously.
Thank you, Vish.
And thanks, Jay, for the snacks.
And thanks, Catherine, for your years of documentation and the friendship of all of us and all that stuff.
I think we have time, if you guys would permit
and
it.
Stuff like that.
It was a very heartfelt thing Chris just said that I cut off, and I'm sorry.
I was starting to get heartfelt, but you could tell that I was about to well up, and you said, let's cut this off.
I'm a professional. I stepped in. Is there a song we can play to give people a taste of this book? Do we have permission?
Do you like treble?
Maybe the
sound of cassettes.
The Super Friends, is that what you're referring to?
It's
I don't
funny
know.
How almost everything is recorded on 4-track cassette, or I'd say 60% of it, 60-70%, do you think, of the songs. And it's often with people saying, I borrowed Chris's 4-track when he was out of town.
Yeah.
So
poor Rich Turfry, I feel like, comes off sort of self-consciously badly whenever he speaks of himself in this book. He's just like, I was such an asshole back then. I borrowed Chris's tape machine and wouldn't bring it back. I didn't do the cover.
You can't say something like that as we're wrapping up.
No,
he's great.
He's
self-deprecating.
My friend.
He's from the.
No, I
that's
love
not Rich. How he tells it.
No, Rich and I are relatively friendly.
We're from the Maritimes. We're self-deprecating by nature.
No, but every time he talks in this thing, he's just like, I did this. I feel bad about it now. Like he's some regrets about his youth.
He's just showing off. He's
okay.
Fine.
All right. Anyway, is there what can we play? You pick a song.
Should we play the song that I'm on?
That's true.
Oh yeah.
What song is that, Catherine?
It could be a trivia contest.
Oh yeah. Do you like contests?
If you read the book, it's in there.
Oh yeah.
I don't know what song we're going to.
Stood Up.
What do you do on the song Stood Up?
I scream and then laugh.
She's on lead laugh.
Oh, nice.
It's like we all say, stood up, stood up, stood up, stood up. Woo!
Yeah.
And she's like, I'm Courtney.
Stood up.
Supposed to be
Hey, thanks again for checking out Creative Control with Vish Khanna. You can email me about the show at creativecontrol933@gmail.com. That's creative with a K, control with a K, 933@gmail.com. You can also follow our Twitter at Vish Creative, VishKreative. And you can also like our Facebook page. A version of this show airs on CFRU in Guelph every Wednesday at noon Eastern. And you can listen to that online at CFRU.ca, or if you're in the KW region, at 93.3 FM in Guelph. You can also sign up for the weekly mailing list for the podcast and the show at vishkhanna.com, and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. I believe that is everything I wanted to tell you. Thank you once again.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.